Welcome to our deep dive. You guys sent us some really fascinating excerpts from Dr. Leslie Allen's lectures on the book of Ezekiel, specifically chapters 40 through 42.
Right.
They detail Ezekiel's vision of a brand new temple.
Yes.
It's like stepping into an architect's blueprint.
Yeah.
With measurements and layouts and even furniture.
Wow.
What makes this even more intriguing is that Ezekiel, who was a priest,
right,
received this vision while in exile after the destruction of Jerusalem and the first temple.
That context is key.
Right?
You know,
huge.
Imagine the trauma.
Yes.
The collective trauma that the exiled community must have felt, having their spiritual center just ripped away.
Yeah.
And then in the midst of all this despair, Ezekiel receives this vision.
Yeah.
A glorious and meticulously planned new temple.
Yeah.
It's a powerful statement, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, Dr. Allen points out that this vision comes after an earlier one where Ezekiel actually sees the old temple defiled by pagan practices.
Oh, wow.
So we're really dealing with a stark contrast here.
Right.
A deliberate separation between the sacred and the profane.
Precisely. And, you know, the vision takes place on a very high mountain.
Oh, wow.
Further emphasizing that separation.
Yeah.
It's a bold proclamation of spiritual renewal, a beacon of hope in this, you know, darkness of exile.
Okay, so Ezekiel's on this mountain.
Yeah.
And he's not alone, is he?
No, he's not.
There's this angel with him who's described as having a measuring rod and a tape, taking Ezekiel on this guided tour of this new temple.
Yes.
It's like they're walking through a divine blueprint.
Yes. And the level of detail that the angel provides is extraordinary.
Wow.
Every gatehouse, every chamber, every piece of furniture is meticulously measured and described.
Yeah.
Underscoring the importance of order and holiness in this new temple.
Yeah.
This is a far cry from the chaos and defilement Ezekiel witnessed in his previous vision.
Yeah, so it's almost like a deliberate effort to prevent history from repeating itself.
Exactly. This vision is about rebuilding, but it's also about establishing a new order, a stricter adherence to holiness, to safeguard against future defilement.
Wow, that's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take that to ourselves.
Okay.
What's our first stop on this divine blueprint?
Our journey begins at the outer court.
Okay.
Which is enclosed by a massive perimeter wall over 10 feet high.
Wow.
This wall creates a clear boundary between the holy and the common, a physical manifestation of separation. And within this outer court are three huge gatehouses.
Gatehouses, yeah. Not just gates.
Yeah, these are gatehouses.
They must be pretty impressive to warrant this level of detail.
Oh, they are.
Wow.
Each one measures a massive 86 feet by 43 feet internally.
Wow.
Even grander than the pre-exilic city gatehouses that archaeologists have found.
That's huge. You could practically fit a small village in one of those.
Right.
So we're talking serious security here, a real emphasis on controlling access to the temple. What else is out here in this outer court?
Well, along the inside of the perimeter wall, there are 30 rooms.
Okay.
They aren't given specifics about their function.
Okay.
But they likely serve various administrative or support purposes related to the temple activities.
Oh, so like the support staff had their own dedicated spaces.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've passed through one of these massive gatehouses.
Right.
What happens next?
We ascend a series of 7 steps.
Okay.
Remember, everything here is about elevation and separation.
Yes.
And we find ourselves in the inner court.
Okay.
This is a more restricted area, reserved only for the priests.
Okay, so we're moving deeper into the sacred space now.
Yes.
It's like there are layers of holiness with each step taking us closer to the heart of the temple.
Precisely.
What's in this inner court? Aside from priests, of course.
Well, for starters, there's the altar for sacrifices.
Okay.
Dr. Allen goes into greater detail about its design later on.
Uh-huh.
But it's important to note its presence here.
Okay, the altar.
Yes.
The focal point of sacrifices and offerings.
Right.
A key element in any temple.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get to the altar itself.
Yes.
I'm curious about these gatehouses. Are there more of them in this inner court?
Yes, there are 3 more.
Okay.
One on each side.
Okay.
East, north, and south.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the ones in the outer court.
Yeah.
They all share the same basic design.
Okay.
Except for one intriguing difference.
Okay, now I'm really intrigued. This is where I love these deep dives.
Uh-huh.
Those unexpected details that make you go, wait, what?
Exactly.
Tell me more about this odd gatehouse out.
It's the north gatehouse.
Okay.
At the top of its 8 steps.
Yeah.
There's an additional room in the vestibule.
Mm-hmm.
A room specifically designated for washing the sacrificial animals after they were slaughtered.
Hold on. They built a washing station inside the gatehouse?
Yes.
That's incredible.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. It seems like a very specific and maybe even slightly obsessive attention to detail.
I think it speaks to that emphasis on ritual purity.
Why the emphasis on cleanliness here?
Well, remember, Dezekiel's vision is all about emphasizing holiness and preventing a repeat of the defilement that led to the first temple's destruction.
Right.
This new temple is about meticulous control, a visible manifestation of their renewed covenant with God.
Right.
And ritual purity was a huge part of that covenant.
So it's not just about physical cleanliness, but about spiritual purity as well.
Exactly.
It's like they're trying to wash away the past and start fresh.
Yes.
Both literally and figuratively.
Yes.
That's a powerful statement.
It is.
Okay, so we've got this outer court with its massive walls and gatehouses.
Right.
We've stepped into the inner court reserved for the priests.
Yes.
And meticulously designed for ritual purity.
Mm-hmm.
But where's the temple itself in all this?
Ah, yes, the heart of this sacred complex.
Yes.
We'll journey into the wonders of the temple building itself.
Okay.
In the next part of our deep dive.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
We're back. And standing at the threshold of the temple itself, ready to explore the heart of this sacred complex.
Uh-huh.
After those massive gatehouses and the meticulous attention to ritual purity in the outer and inner courts, I can only imagine what awaits us inside.
It's certainly a moment of heightened anticipation, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Ezekiel's description doesn't disappoint.
Okay.
The temple building itself, while strikingly similar in design to Solomon's temple, is imbued with this sense of awe and reverence that speaks to this renewed emphasis on holiness.
So give us a glimpse inside.
Okay.
What's the layout like?
Okay, so picture this.
Okay.
You step through the entrance and you find yourself in a covered porch.
Okay.
This leads into the nave, a larger central space, and finally at the very back, the Holy of Holies.
Ah, the Holy of Holies, the most sacred space
where
God's presence dwelled in the old temple.
Right.
What does Ezekiel see there?
This is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
He doesn't actually see inside. Only the angel enters the Holy of Holies to take measurements.
Okay.
Emphasizing its sanctity and inaccessibility.
Wow.
Even Ezekiel, a priest, is kept at a distance.
Wow. That's a powerful visual.
Yes.
A reminder that some things are beyond human comprehension, even for those dedicated to serving God.
Exactly.
But Ezekiel does get a detailed tour of the nave, right?
He does.
What stands out in that space?
Besides the overall layout and dimensions, Ezekiel describes intricate wooden paneling covering the interior walls.
Okay.
These panels are adorned with carved reliefs of cherubim and palm trees.
Okay.
Creating a visually stunning and symbolically rich environment.
Cherubim and palm trees. So we're talking divine guardians and symbols of life.
Yes.
Woven into the very fabric of the temple.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine those carvings would evoke a sense of both protection and hope.
Precisely. These motifs were very common in ancient Near Eastern temples, but the cherubim in Ezekiel's vision have a unique detail.
Okay.
They each have two faces looking sideways.
Two faces. Now that's interesting. Yes. I remember reading about cherubim with four faces representing their all-seeing nature.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a connection here?
You're right to draw that connection.
Okay.
Dr. Allen suggests these two-faced cherubim are a symbolic two-dimensional representation of their four-faced counterparts.
Okay.
It's a way of conveying their constant vigilance, their role as guardians of God's holiness.
Right.
Even within the confines of a two-dimensional carving.
It's like those two faces represent a sort of watchful presence.
Yes.
A reminder that God's eyes are always upon them.
Right.
Fascinating. Okay, so we've got these beautifully carved walls.
Right.
What else is in the nave?
There's a wooden table.
Okay.
Described initially as an altar.
Okay.
For the bread of the presence.
The bread of the presence.
Yes.
I remember reading about that in the descriptions of Solomon's temple.
Mm-hmm.
12 loaves of bread symbolizing the 12 tribes of Israel were placed on this table every Sabbath as an offering to God.
Yes.
But why is it being called an altar here?
That's a great question.
Altars are usually associated with animal sacrifices, not bread offerings.
You're absolutely right.
So
Dr. Allen believes this dual naming table and altar is deliberate.
Okay.
It emphasizes the sacrificial nature of the bread,
mm-hmm.
reinforcing the idea that it wasn't for God's consumption,
right,
but its symbolic offering,
okay,
representing the sustenance and unity of the 12 tribes.
So it's about elevating the significance of the bread offering,
yes,
connecting it more directly to the act of sacrifice.
Exactly.
It's like they're saying, this bread represents us, our lives, offered back to God.
Yeah.
It really adds another layer of meaning to something that might otherwise seem like a simple ritual.
Yes, move. Very symbolic.
Okay, so we've got the porch,
right,
the nave with its cherubim carvings and bread of presence table.
Yes.
And then the Holy of Holies at the back.
Uh-huh.
Shrouded in mystery and accessible only to the angel.
Yes.
What else is there to see in this sprawling temple complex?
Well, remember those three annex buildings we briefly mentioned?
Yes.
The ones attached to the temple on three sides,
mm-hmm,
each with an outside stairway leading up to them.
Right. Dr. Allen said they weren't as high as the temple itself,
right,
and seemed to serve a more practical purpose.
Yes.
What exactly were those buildings for?
Those buildings were actually quite important.
Okay.
Each one was three stories high, each floor containing 30 rooms.
30 rooms per floor. That's 90 rooms per building.
A lot of rooms.
And there are three of them. We're talking serious square footage here.
We are.
What was going on in all those rooms?
According to Dr. Allen, they served as storage areas for temple supplies and as dining halls for the priests.
Okay.
Remember, many of the offerings brought to the temple were given to the priests to eat.
Okay, so these annexes were like a combination of a pantry,
yes,
a supply closet, and a cafeteria, all dedicated to supporting the temple and its priests.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense, but I can't help but think there's something more to it,
right,
given the sheer scale of these buildings.
You're right to sense that.
Okay.
There's another fascinating detail about these annex buildings.
Okay.
The priests had to change their clothes there,
oh,
switching from their ceremonial garb to regular attire before entering the outer court.
Wait, why the wardrobe change?
It's a good question.
Weren't they still within the temple complex?
Yes, but remember, the outer court was accessible to the general public,
right,
and considered less holy than the inner court and the temple itself.
Uh-huh.
This change of clothing symbolized a shift in their ritual status, a transition from the sacred duties within the temple,
right,
to the more mundane interactions in the outer court.
It's like they were stepping back into the everyday world.
Yes.
Leaving behind the heightened sanctity of the inner temple.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating how even the smallest details in this vision are imbued with symbolic meaning.
It is, isn't it?
Okay, so we've explored the temple itself, from the mysterious Holy of Holies to those massive annex buildings.
Yes.
What's next on our tour of Ezekiel's vision?
Well, remember that massive perimeter wall we encountered at the very beginning?
Yes.
The one separating the sacred from the common?
Mm-hmm.
We're circling back to that now.
Okay.
And it's here that the symbolism of boundaries takes center stage.
Okay, we're back and ready to delve into this final layer of Ezekiel's vision.
Okay.
We've explored the heart of the temple with its meticulous layout and symbolic details,
mm-hmm,
but now we're shifting focus to the outer boundary,
right,
that massive perimeter wall.
Uh-huh.
It feels like we're coming full circle back,
yeah,
to where we started.
Right back to the beginning.
Right. And you mentioned the angel measuring the entire wall.
Yes.
It seemed almost like an afterthought in Dr. Allen's lectures.
Yes.
But now I'm starting to see it as a crucial piece of the puzzle.
It is.
What's the significance of this final measurement?
Well, remember how we talked about those layers of holiness?
Yeah.
The gradual ascent from the outer court to the inner court and finally the temple itself?
Right.
This final measurement of the perimeter wall reinforces that concept on a grand scale.
Okay.
It's like drawing a line in the sand,
uh-huh,
delineating the sacred space from the world outside.
So it's not just about keeping things out,
right,
but about defining what's in.
Exactly.
Creating a clear boundary for the sacred.
Precisely.
Okay.
And the measurements themselves add another layer of symbolism.
Okay. How so?
The angel reveals that the wall forms a perfect square.
Okay.
Enclosing a staggering 17 acres.
A perfect square. 17 acres.
17 acres.
That's enormous. It's like they're carving out a whole city dedicated to holiness.
It's a powerful statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
The square shape with its four equal sides represents wholeness, perfection, and divine order.
Right.
And that vast enclosed space emphasizes the absolute sanctity of the temple complex.
It's, yeah, like saying this space is set apart, dedicated to God, and governed by divine order.
Yes.
But what about the people?
Uh-huh.
How would this vision have impacted those exiled in Babylon,
yeah,
longing for their lost homeland and their destroyed temple?
Imagine hearing this description.
Yeah.
And visiting this glorious new temple rising from the ashes of their despair.
Right.
It would have been an incredible source of hope, a promise of restoration.
Yeah.
A tangible symbol of their future.
It's like they're being given a blueprint, not just for a physical building,
right,
but for rebuilding their lives, their relationship with God.
Precisely. This meticulously planned temple, with its emphasis on holiness and order,
mm-hmm,
offered them a vision of a future where they would once again be in right relationship with God.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the heart of this vision's power.
So after this incredible journey through Ezekiel's vision,
yeah,
what's the takeaway, the big so what for us today?
Well, for me, it's a reminder that even in the face of devastation and loss,
mm-hmm,
even when we feel far removed from what we hold sacred,
yeah,
hope and respiration are possible.
That's a good word.
It's also a challenge to create our own sacred spaces,
okay,
whether physical or metaphorical,
yeah,
where we can connect with what we hold dear, where we can find renewal and reconnect with our values.
That's a powerful thought. It's like we can take inspiration from this ancient vision,
mm,
and apply it to our own lives, creating those boundaries, those spaces that allow us to cultivate what is truly sacred to us.
Yes.
We've explored the courts, the gatehouses, the temple itself,
mm,
and even traced the outer boundaries of this holy city.
A lot of ground covered.
It's been an incredible journey through Ezekiel's vision.
Yes, it has.
And as we wrap up, I'm left with one final thought.
Okay.
We focused on the physical details of this new temple.
Right.
But what does this vision tell us about the spiritual state of the exiled community? What were their hopes and anxieties? And how does this meticulously designed temple, with its layers of holiness and emphasis on purity, address those deeper needs?
Good question.
That's something for you to ponder as you delve further into this fascinating text. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.